Water Authority is asking for a rate increase, but groups are lining up against it. But first, former super lobbyist Harvey Whittemore is being sued by his business partners, and it's a case that is lifting the curtain on some inside political deals. Joining us to discuss these and other issues are David McGrath Schwartz, who covers politics and the state capitol for the Las Vegas Sun, and Joe Shaneman, who covers Clark County government.
Michael.
David, you've been following this Whittemore case. What are we seeing behind this curtain that you speak of in your stories?
Yeah, I mean, this is in many ways a classic Las Vegas story. It was a massive, ambitious, essentially land deal is the main part of it. Coyote Springs, about 60 miles northeast of Las Vegas, is going to be a massive housing development. Some people described it as a Palm Springs for Las Vegas. And this is back in the early 2000s when, you know, that sounded feasible and almost possible, and it all collapsed. The details of these lawsuits that the two parties filed, the Cenoses filed their lawsuit, and then Harvey Whittemore, who was probably the prominent lobbyist in Nevada politics, filed a countersuit, lays out some of the gory details of a business deal gone bad, where the reason we're talking about it today is the implications it could have for the political world.
Let's start before we get into some of the details that come out. Who is or was Harvey Whittemore, and why should we care?
Harvey Whittemore was a lobbyist for some of the biggest names in the state, including probably most prominently the NRA, which is the Nevada Resort Association in Nevada. They're not the gun-toting NRA of the rest of the world. And he was what's known as a closer in Nevada lobbying political circles, which means that the legislature he'd serve as a go-between between lawmakers, really helped shape policy, find solutions, played a key role in the political process, and that also translated into a lot of money in campaign donations to state candidates and also federal candidates, including U.S. senators.
And so what has come to pass then that he is being sued by his business partners?
Well, it depends what side you believe here. His business, he entered into a business partnership with Tomasino, who is a partner at the Peppermill Casino up in Reno, Northern California land developer, and eventually his brother, Albert Cino Jr., and then Albert Cino Jr.'s son, and it was to fund this massive project called Coyote Springs. According to the Cenoses, Mr. Whittemore abused the company that they worked for, used it as his personal ATM, is the implication in the lawsuit. Mr. Whittemore says that the partners got antsy about their investment and started making unreasonable demands, started threatening his life and his family's life, and things fell apart from there.
Okay, so you say that we get some detail about some political insiders and how they're operating. What do we see exactly, or what do we see alleged in the lawsuit, I guess I should say?
Yeah, I mean, and let's be clear right now that this is part of the lawsuit, and so we're going to wait for depositions, and folks are expected to be deposed.
Who do you think is right?
You can just ignore that and keep talking, dude.
Two parts of the lawsuit sort of jumped out to folks I talked to and to me. One is a $70,000 a month retainer that, according to the lawsuit, Mr. Whittemore had paid to a lobbying firm. My sources said that that was R&R Partners, which is kind of the premier lobbying and advertising firm in the state, that was on retainer. And $70,000 is a lot of money, even in sort of the grown-up big boy circles. where normal, at least government lobbying contracts are about $25,000 a month. That was a significant amount of money. The other piece is a $250,000 loan that, according to the lawsuit, was made to Pete Earnott, who is a principal at R&R and also a prominent lobbyist, advisor to Republicans from Governor Sandoval, notably, to also former Senator John Ensign. And according to the lawsuit, Harvey Whittemore ordered that that $250,000 loan be written off a few years after it was made. Now, what R&R tells me is that, first of all, that they can't talk in detail about it because it's the subject of the lawsuit. And secondly, that what they did was above board. And, you know, R&R says, hey, this was much more than just a lobbying contract. They did a lot of work for them for Coyote Springs marketing and designing. There's a Jack Nicklaus signature golf course out there that they did a lot of work on, and that these expenditures were all accounted for.
Now, as it goes forward, we've learned also that the FBI has subpoenaed some people to look at donations they made.
The accusation here is that Harvey Whittemore was funneling money essentially through his employees and family members and friends to Senator Harry Reid and others. Shelley Berkley, Dean Heller have given money back, which certainly to some, you know, has the whiff of smoke and, you know, in the court of public opinion, which only matters in that court, you know, it doesn't look good.
Yeah, as we talk about this, though, I guess we should say that that was illegal at the time. Now that would not be illegal. What's at least is out there that the FBI is looking at this bundling. Now you could someone like Whittemore could plow as much money as he wanted into.
From my understanding, he'd have to form a separate PAC that couldn't be directly controlled by the.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
By the candidate, it would have to be at least.
Could only be controlled by winks and nods from the candidate.
Well, let's at least call it a paper mache wall.
Okay.
Between them, but
I guess what I'm saying is that it's not like there are no bodies buried out there. That I mean, we're talking about something that by today's or by 2012 standards is a kind of innocent looking. When we look at the money being plowed into campaigns.
I mean, when you're looking at Sheldon Adelson. Putting in, and his family putting in, what, $11 million so far, saying he's willing to put in $10 million, $100 million, and compare that to the amount of money we're talking about today, it does seem to be much smaller denominations.
Okay, so where does it go from here then?
Well, right now you have the depositions that are going to happen, and I mean, this is a legal dispute. Both these lawsuits filed by Harvey Whittemore and his wife Annette and the Sinos' lawsuits have a lot of accusations in it, and so people are going to get deposed and we'll see what shakes out. It's going to provide probably the most or a interesting piece of this is what the Gaming Control Board is going to do. Nevada prides itself on having this, you know, what they like to say is the gold standard in gaming regulations, and you have these accusations by someone who knows Harvey Whittemore that the Sinos' are tied up in the mob and threatened physical bodily harm, and arguably that's the whole purpose that our gaming regulation was set up, was to prevent and to rid the gaming industry of these mob connections. So, you know, I'm very interested to see how the Gaming Control Board is going to handle this and what if any actions they take. Also politically, you know, how's this going to shake up the way the world works in Nevada?
You're listening to Las Vegas on Politics on KUNV. I'm Michael Squires. We're speaking with David McGrath Schwartz, who covers the state capitol. David, this week, or actually late last week, Senator Elizabeth Halseth, a Republican in the state Senate, stepped down. She's going through a divorce, said she's having difficulty finding work. But this creates another seat for Republicans to try to fill and perhaps an opening for Democrats to expand their lead there in the state Senate, which had been seen by Republicans, at least, as a prime target for them to take over the majority. What are you hearing as far as what the race would shape up to look like for that seat?
Well, Republicans announced their candidate today. He's a doctor, and they're pretty high on him, and think that he has a chance, at least, of holding it. But they're going to have to take 4 out of 5 Senate races, which is a tall order, especially with Democrats believing, and I don't know if this is true or not, that the presidential race is going to help them and push Democratic-leaning voters out in Nevada. One of the interesting things that I found was looking back at how Senator Halseth got elected was that Democrats or Democratic-aligned groups actually helped Senator Halseth get elected, thinking that she'd be vulnerable in a general election. That didn't work out so well for these Democratic groups, and Senator Halseth won. So there's a lot of intrigue here.
And you say 4 of 5 races. We know that 2 Democratic state senator incumbents have said they're not going to run for re-election, stepped down.
Right.
Senator Kopening and Senator Breeden.
The other one is Sheila Leslie is running against, who's a longtime lawmaker in Reno. She is moving to run against Greg Brower. And then Scott Hammond's seat is... I shouldn't call it Scott Hammond's seat. There's another seat in Las Vegas or in southern Nevada that Assemblyman Scott Hammond is running for, also another Republican.
I was going to say, you're already calling that race?
Another Republican, Richard MacArthur, is running in the primary there.
Yeah.
But that seat's relatively close. And then you have Senator Halseth's seat or former seat.
You had a bit of, I guess we could call it, certainly confidence, if not more than that, on the part of Republicans, thinking that they were going to pick up the seats held by Senators Kopening and Breeden, certainly. And they were outraising Democrats, getting more donations to fund these campaigns. Do you sense that similar confidence now that all these shifts have occurred and now they would have to win 4 out of 5 races, which seems to be kind of a tall order?
You know, Michael Roberson, who's the state senator and Republican who's heading up their election efforts, he is putting on a good effort and says he's still confident about their chances. But you go from a battle on 2 fronts with the 2 incumbent Democrats deciding not to seek re-election to all of a sudden this many-fronted fight and just the math gets much harder for Republicans, much better for Democrats.
We've been seeing, as you've reported, a lot of the business community supporting the Republicans, saying that they would like to see the Assembly in Democratic hands and the Senate in Republican hands. Are we going to see more money going toward the Democrats now that the odds look longer for the Republicans to pull this off?
You know, it's a great question. I think a little bit closer to the election, you're going to see the industry start to hedge their bets because, let's face it, everyone loves a winner, especially if you're going to have to testify in front of their committee and have to get something out of a lawmaker during the session. So I think you are going to see that type of hedging at, when we get closer to the election.
I like the underdogs.
You're listening to Las Vegas Sun Politics on KUMV. I'm Michael Squires, politics editor at The Sun. Well, so far, you've called one winner of a race, and Shaneman has indicated who he likes. The town of Laughlin wants to become a city, but Clark County this week rejected that request. Joe Shaneman, you're now writing that kind of looming over this entire effort by the town of Laughlin, the town of 7,500, about 100 miles south of Las Vegas, right there at the very tippy tip of Nevada, is a massive proposed project by a China company, Chinese-based company, ENN Mojave Energy, that they want to build what they call an eco-city. It would manufacture solar panels. It would power itself through solar, a giant solar plant. How is this proposal affecting the efforts to have Laughlin incorporate?
Well, I'm not exactly sure, but for the rumors down there, it's sort of a little bit of Laughlin sanity to take a pun from the New York
by
Knicks.
All means, let's get on that bandwagon.
Yeah, this Laughlin sanity. The rumor mill down there is talking about how the Clark County government doesn't want to let go of that land, no matter what, even if Laughlin can prove. So what this all hinges upon is Laughlin's desire to become its own little city. They claim that if they become their own city, they'll have regulations which will allow businesses to flourish down there because they won't be under the onerous yoke of the Clark County permitting process, which is, they say, is so expensive that it forces businesses to go across the river into Arizona. And if you've ever come up over the knoll and looked down into Laughlin, you see, casinos, and really that's about it.
Yeah, there's long been that tension between the Arizona and the Nevada side, because most of the people who work in the casinos on the Nevada side live on the Arizona side. So the Arizona side has said Nevada's exporting its social ills to Arizona side because the social services over there.
Yeah, because Arizona is such a educational,
yes, exactly,
progressive place.
But Arizona isn't getting the revenue from the casinos, but it's providing services for the employees. I guess that's the blade of the argument, so to speak. So in this case, if Laughlin were to incorporate, how would that change the way ENN, this Chinese company, goes about getting its project?
The Laughlinites I've talked to believe it would make it easier for ENN that perhaps, I think this is, I don't know what, perhaps it would make it easier that they'd already be constructing. People in the county say that's absolutely ridiculous. All they wanted to do is be sure that Laughlin was able to fiscally support itself if it became incorporated. Yesterday, the Clark County Commission said, we're not going to give you the right to vote on that because all the studies show you if we gave you the right to incorporate, you voted on it, and then you did, you wouldn't be able to support yourself, and we would end up coming in and supporting you anyways. They say, well, if ENN comes...
Wouldn't it become the state's problem at that point? David, you've written about North Las Vegas and the legislature.
Yeah, the legislature actually considered it last week, too, before they punted to the Clark County Commission.
And it's going back to the state.
Yeah, at some point, and that's where you had a lot of tension going up. You had folks from North Las Vegas and the urban areas saying, wait a second, this is going to cut into, first of all, it's going to cut into our pie. We're going to have to share money to service Laughlin. And secondly, if Laughlin doesn't pencil out and it does go broke, it's the state that ultimately has to pay for it. And also the county. I mean, Joe's right that probably Laughlin would go hat in hand to Clark County asking for money or reserves or something like that.
And there's really doubts as to how much the county would save, because Clark County would still need a fire department and a police department presence there, because none of the casinos want to be part of this incorporated Laughlin. They all carved out through lobbyists an exemption. So if Laughlin ever becomes a city, the casinos, a huge number of them on the river, will all still be in Clark County's jurisdiction. The county will be responsible for fire and service.
Well, if you pull the casinos out, what's left of Laughlin?
Like a gas station, some toothless kid with a bow and arrow, and that's about, I don't know. I mean,
well, I, okay.
It's about 7,200 people, right?
7,200 people.
I mean,
right.
Rubbing sticks together for fires. And
well, I mean, one of the comparisons that they make, or you talk to Joe Hardy, the assemblyman who represents this area, he says, if Mesquite can pull it off, Laughlin certainly can. Mesquite's about 1,500 people, he says. I'm not that versed in my population figures for the small burgs of the state, but I'll take his word. You know, here we are.
And his argument is based, I think, largely upon the expenses that Clark County currently pays for the wages of firefighters and police down there. We have very high firefighter salaries, as I've written about many times over the last few years. They would essentially get rid of them and create their own fire department at much lower salaries, they believe. And the same, I think, with police. And they think it'd be doable, especially, and they kind of put the cart before the horse. I hate that using that phrase. But if ENN comes online, they're thinking of a potential tax windfall in the tens and tens of millions in property taxes. And when that comes online, they'll have all this money to be able to do, to provide all the services that Laughlinites need. Now, that's part of their argument, though, is that why Clark County never wants to let it go. They believe even if ENN is built, and they all believe it's firmly it's going to be built, once Clark County gets a hold of all that money, this pot of gold, you know, being dropped off by these huge carrier pigeons into the coffers of Clark County, Clark County will never want to let it go. That they'll figure out some other excuse.
What does Clark County say about that?
A boulder dash. Steve Sisolak and the rest of the people up there in the county say, as soon as you can afford it and you can support yourselves, we'll let you go. We'll let the baby try to walk on its own.
So I realize that getting a hold of ENN is probably not a possibility, but certainly this Chinese company has lobbyists and trying to work out these deals to get the land that it needs for the project here in Southern Nevada. What do those individuals say about the company's position on Laughlin being
people I've talked to, like this is not a company that really wants to get out there and create waves. They're very, I wouldn't say they're holding their cards close to their vest. They just don't want to get in the middle of this.
See no advantage maybe in getting in a political fight. Yeah.
Their contract, their agreement with Clark County is once they get a purchase power agreement, which is an agreement by some power company here or California, Arizona, to purchase power from their massive solar array, then Clark County will sell them 9,000 acres of land at dirt cheap prices, and they can begin construction. From all that I've heard, the company has no problem with Clark County at this moment, although Laughlinites believe differently. And they're just... It's a long process to get this agreement, this purchase power agreement or power purchase agreement. It's been referred to both ways. Process to get it finalized.
Right, and we've talked about this here on the radio, that you have to get this agreement in place before you can, you know, you're not going to go out and build solar panels and not send the energy anywhere, obviously. Any indication on where that is, if it's progressing? They're trying to sell it to California, is my
understanding. I think 18 months. 18 months before something like that will be finalized. In fact, I asked somebody if our own Harry Reid, the most powerful politician in the country, can, like, you know, bend some arms, break some legs, whatever, to get this done. And it's the people I've talked to said it's really, you know, he really doesn't have that much control over it. A power company is not going to bend to the will of a politician if it's not economically feasible for them to get into an agreement like that.
And I would also note that Senator Heller wrote a letter in support of allowing Laughlin to vote on whether or not to incorporate. So did Speaker John Asagura, who's running for Congress. And according to the Laughlin paper, Senator Heller, Senator Reid and Shelley Berkeley have also given their support for allowing Laughlin to vote. So it's interesting to me how much sort of political.
The Laughlin sovereignty movement has a lot of friends. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, if that happens, it's going to be enormous. What happens down there is going to change the face of that entire city. Maybe the economic development of the entire southern part of the state. It would be an enormous change here. So they all.
Maybe we should go into business building a Palm Springs southeast of
9,000 acres is the size of the development. $6 billion. So, indeed, will be a massive thing. The Southern Nevada Water Authority, shifting gears here, is looking at raising rates. They have three different proposals. One of them, and the one favored by Pat Mulroy, the water czar, would impose a surcharge on all bills for residential ratepayers of $5 a month. Las Vegas Chamber of Commerce came out against that today, saying that they think that that's too low, that residential customers should pay a little more, because otherwise businesses would have to pay see increases of 50 to 300% on their bills, and that would be passed along. Joe Shaneman, you have been following this for months now.
Yeah,
what's going on? Anyway, what this is unusual, though, in that the chamber has been seen as an ally of the water authority, certainly getting more water, keeping the growth going. That's certainly something that the business community has favored.
Yeah, it is. It's very unusual. The water authority has been seen by many as working for the business community, so this sort of seems like, to me, probably not to many people, a slap in the face, but they're concerned about their members and this fragile economic turnaround, if we're having that right now, they believe is it could be shaken and could be hurt severely by these water increases, these rate increases. It wouldn't be a rate increase. This is an additional new charge onto your current bill. It's totally, completely separate and new, and they have to do it because they have invested. They have total investments, outstanding debt of $3.3 billion, and they have this new intake into Lake Mead of $800 million, and they have to pay for it somehow. They don't have connection fees to do it anymore.
Yeah, you noted that the connection fees, they were collecting in 2005, 2006 fiscal year, totaled $188 million, and that is now around $11 million. Just not the building. People aren't connecting to the system.
Right.
In the numbers they were. And so that necessitates them finding some other way.
So it's going to happen. Yeah. I mean, we're getting a water rate increase. It's, and even the chamber knows we got to have it. Somebody has to pay for this. It's just how it's going to be paid for. And I wonder if residential users are going to agree with their stand. I mean, there's a Commissioner Steve Sisolak thinks the flat rate of $5 should go up too, but only to maybe $6. Mm-hmm. But it should be held on to for more than 3 years, maybe five or more years. He wants more stability. He didn't really weigh in just yet on the $10 monthly figure.
So is there any type of pundit or, not pundit, but any type of consumer advocate down in Clark County?
There are a lot of water pundits down here, but I don't know. Do we have a...
Well, there's Plan, I guess, and Launce.
Sure.
Lawrence Rake of the Progressive Leadership Alliance. One question I have here is that they've come up with these three scenarios. One is tying the increase to usage. You know, per 1,000 gallons, your charge would go up. So you increase your incentive to conserve. The second is this flat surcharge that we've talked about of $5. And then the third is kind of a combination of the two. I mean, how much wiggle room is there? If people are coming in, they're supposed to vote on this 1 week from today.
Mm-hmm.
They've studied this thing for, you know, a year and a half. Can they with confidence massage this and get to the whatever the number is they need to pay off their obligations for their capital improvements?
It's all going to be a flat rate. I'll just lay my cards on the table now. The water increase based on usage won't happen, and the combination of the two won't happen. It's going to be a flat rate of some sort, and they will do it. I mean, I don't know how much massaging it needs. They'll probably just put a solid number in each one and calculate it and see what it comes out to be.
Now, the Water Authority has kind of gone out and done a little bit of a publicity tour on this over the last month and a half. And what are they saying now? Are they just staying quiet and waiting for the vote next week?
Or
are they...
I read a story earlier today that, it sounded like Pat Mulroy was all up in arms and upset talking about, how do they expect... to pay for these things, but that's not what they're saying. They're not saying we don't want to pay for it. It's just the manner in which and how it's spread out among the people. And the chamber says because the largest number of consumers or water users are residential, they should pay more for the water use.
We'll be waiting for your coverage of that vote, Joe. Joe Shaneman covers Clark County. David McGrath Schwartz covers politics in the state capitol. You can follow their coverage and the rest of the Sun Politics team at lasvegassun.com/politics.
Thanks, Michael.
I'm Michael Squires. Good night.